Good morning. It is March 17th. As we can tell, it's St. Patrick's Day. It is, and we are the Education Subcommittee on for Ways and Means, and I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 5016 and 5017. And Mr. Wilson, do you have a few words for us?
Madam Chair, members in the audience, we have not quite as many, but I do have at least almost three full sheets. What we'll do is we'll take those that have signed up on previous days first, and then go to 100 miles or more, and then return to those that are signing up for the first time today. And if I haven't cross-checked properly, I tried. I apologize, and if we don't get to you and you think you signed up, come over and talk to Julie, the woman in the green top there, and we'll make sure we'll try to get you on. We're going to lessen, or we're going to reduce it to 2 minutes or maybe a little more, but the timer only goes to in minute intervals, so keep that in mind, and we'll take off here.
Thank you, Doug. We are going to start first with Beaverton School District, and that's Jeff Rose and Karen Hoffman and Susan Greenberg. On deck, I'm sorry, is going to be David Douglas School District with Don and Rob. And one person from North Clackamas, Matt Utterberg, will make the second team. And we're expecting incredible presentations this morning. We had a fifth grader last week that just wowed us. So the caliber of presentations is high, along with Smarter Balance. So please start.
Good morning, co-chairs Monroe and Comp, and members of the committee. I'm Karen Hoffman, a middle school science teacher and president of the Beaverton Education Association. I'm here before you today to ask you to increase the K-12 school funding allocation. The proposed $7.235 billion is far below the amount that Oregon schools need to provide stability. I remember well the instability and chaos Beaverton School District faced 2 years ago. Hundreds of teachers were laid off, causing class sizes in my district to balloon. I'll never forget the tearful phone call I received from a seventh grade math teacher 2 years ago. He was an innovative teacher who was beloved by his students. He made the most difficult math concepts understandable to kids. He made learning math fun. He knew what it took to be a great teacher. That day 2 years ago, he called to tell me what his math classes were like. He had 56 seventh graders in one small room. It was so crowded, he couldn't move around the room helping students. He couldn't utilize the techniques that he knew were best. Small group work and engaging hands-on activities that make learning come alive. He was forced to use textbooks and worksheets, keeping students in their seats, unengaged and unmotivated. And it was tearing him apart. He knew what his students needed, but there were just too many of them. This scenario is still all too common today across Oregon. Most districts are still struggling to meet the needs of students with inadequate funding. Beaverton is fortunate. Our community would not allow this struggle to continue and pass both a levy and a bond to fill the gaps in state funding. But most districts aren't as fortunate as Beaverton. Today, that math teacher in Beaverton has 34 students, and he is once again able to provide a quality math education to his students. Most communities can't afford to supplement state funding, and it's not right. The city you live in should not determine whether your schools can provide an adequate education for your students.
And I'm going to ask you to finish up.
This is an unacceptable inequity for Oregon's children, and I implore you to fight for them. Please raise the K-12 allocation to $7.5 billion. Do what is right for Oregon's children. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Susan Greenberg, and I'm a locally elected school board member from the Beaverton School District and a parent of two children in the school district. I'm asking you to fund our schools at a level that will not take us backwards. This is too important to rush. We have just started to recover from the severe cuts of 2 years ago and are not close to where we were in 2008. $7.235 billion would underfund our schools. At this level, we would have $4.1 million less for next year than what we are receiving this year. The results of this could be eliminating teacher positions and raising class sizes, or loss of half of our counseling staff, eliminating all summer school and after-school programs, and still cutting teacher positions. And a school with 500 students, that's a half-time reading specialist or a PE teacher. In 2012-13, Beaverton School District cut over 400 positions. To avoid class sizes over 40, my daughter's school implemented 2 4th grade classes and 2 4-5 split classes. My daughter Zoe was in fourth grade, placed in a 4-5 split class, with a teacher being a media specialist whose job was eliminated and was placed in the classroom. There were a total of 7 4th graders in this class of 32 students. They felt isolated and basically were doing 5th grade curriculum in the 4th grade. My daughter would often come home in tears. Their 5th grade experience was predominantly a repeat of the year before. My daughter could not wait to be challenged in 6th grade. We've built back, but we have so much we need to do. $7.5 billion would just give us fragile stability. We were requesting at least $7.5 billion, which would keep us stable. Stable from our perspective is not what our students deserve. Close to where we were in 2008. Again, we are not close to where we were in 2008. And we have 2,000 more students than we did before. Our students are prevented from reaching their potential. Class sizes unacceptably high, where teachers have student loads of over 200 at the high school level. And personalized attention is impossible.
And I'm special ed and to finish.
Transition exactly services finish. For most fragile students reduce. Counselor ratios in the 600 to 700 ranges. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, and thank mm-hmm. you for your public service of yep. being a school board
thank
member.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Rose. I'm the superintendent of the Beaverton School District. And it's not a secret where Oregon stands relative to the rest of the country, specific to how we support our schools. To cut to the chase, we are in the bottom of the barrel, and we need to make a move, a bold move. Now, the debate of whether 7.235 is enough in education is interesting, but I will tell you it's a smokescreen. The overall budget translates to our general fund, which is 86% in people. That will mean that we either are making reductions or we are making additions. And right now, the idea of offsets will not help our general fund. Now, I'm biased. I'm a biased educator. I've been an instructional assistant, a classroom teacher, a principal, a superintendent in 2 different districts in this state. I have a doctorate in education, and I will tell you that I have lots to learn, but I do know something relative to the overall infrastructure needed to support students. And I can tell you in my time, I understand what it means to make difficult, even brutal decisions. In my time, I've reorganized, downsized, and eliminated hundreds of positions and teachers. I've reduced and decimated vital programs, PE, music, librarian, sports programs. I've had to close schools and negotiate too many cut school days to count. This erosion in Oregon has a cumulative effect. We clearly have become desensitized relative to what we're doing to schools over time. It's become almost our calling card. And I will tell you that right now, what our students are receiving relative to what they deserve is askew. This conversation of 7.235 and 7.5 is actually an embarrassing one. It's one I don't think we should talk about. When are we going to be bold? So I'll cut to the chase. I will tell you that we have 3 specific asks. I have asked for you. So number one, I'm asking you to keep talking about K-12 education. Wait for our upcoming economic forecast to make any decisions. Our kids deserve that. Number two, in the short term, like deciding between cutting a teacher or a counselor, cutting PE or music, I'm asking you to make difficult decisions in other areas of the budget to support K-12 education on behalf of our students. And the third thing I'm asking in long term is if there's not enough money to funding everything we need in Oregon, then I'm asking you to boldly generate revenue And in the meantime, knowing that that will take time, don't hold education and our kids hostage to doing so. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your drive down this morning. I hope it was a good one. Well, it's beautiful out there. Okay, now we're going to do these together. So it's Don Grotting and Bob Gray, and then from North Clackamas, Matt Utterback. On deck is from Forest Grove. We're going to have Yvonne Curtis, Mira Rosa Bart. I'm sorry. Anyway, we've got a great student here from Forest Grove. And then, yeah, and then Rob Hess, if you want to join the Forest Grove group next time, that would be awesome. Okay.
Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, other distinguished members of the committee. My name is Don Grotting. I'm the superintendent of the David Douglas School District. I've asked to have passed out a document that was just released ranking all 50 states. Oregon ranks 48 out of 50 states for quality of their K-12 education. Oregon was one of the 8 states given an F for a grade. Oregon funds each of their child $1,275 below the national average. Oregon has the second highest student-teacher ratio in the United States. And we offer our students less instructional time than 47 other states. Oregon has the worst attendance rate of any of the 50 states regarding our high school graduates going to college. So when the 7.235 budget came out, needless to say, our parents and our children and our community was devastated. This means a $75 per student decrease from what we're receiving right now. I've been told that, you know, when I come up here, to get your attention, I'm supposed to personalize your story. I've got about 10,000 stories, personalized stories in my district. David Douglas is poster child for your most highest poverty and diverse district with an 80% free and reduced lunch rate, and we speak over 80 different languages. My personal stories are I have kindergarten class sizes of over 30, core class sizes at a secondary of over 40. I have elective classes of over 60. And our students have to pay for co-curricular programs in order to be able to fund those programs. So many of those students, they simply don't have the money. Three of my elementary school catchment areas have a 62% free and reduced subsistence where they're receiving food stamps.
And I'm going to ask you to
I'll leave you with this final thought. I know that each of you are parents, and you have and would sacrifice for your children. What I'm asking you to do right now is to sacrifice for all the children in Oregon, and we need a 7.875 budget to make that happen, to improve not only the education for our students, but for our economy of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. You are awesome.
Good morning, Education Subcommittee co-chairs and members. My name is Bob Graham, an educator in David Douglas. As you know, the proposed K-12 funding of $7.235 billion, if passed, Oregon will take a major step backwards again in meeting the QEM standards that provide a framework for a quality education in our state. David Douglas is unique in comparison to other school districts given several key factors. We've always maintained a fiscally conservative budget, and over the past 5 years, we're enjoying a truly collaborative relationship between our union and district, and together helped pass a $40 million bond in one of the most diverse and high-poverty districts in the state. It's been sheer luck coupled with a lot of hard work by all of our stakeholders. We're doing dynamic work around what our students deserve, and most of our schools possess the key indicators, the quality indicators, that the QEM recommends. We're making gains in our high school graduation rates and with our second language learners. We've won almost every state award for leadership, from Building Principal of the Year to Superintendent of the Year honors. Our union's leadership's collaborative efforts and unique approaches to problem solving are gaining statewide attention. However, all this work will be in vain if all that is passed is 7.235. Even with this number, David Douglas will have to consider furlough days, a first time ever in our district's history, We will need to terminate another 30 to 40 teachers, and there'll be no relief for our kindergarten classrooms of 30 students. At the high school, we have 3,100 students. These graduating class of 2015's only high school experiences for student learning conditions are with classes of 40, elective classes of 60, and PE classes of over 70. These students have been denied the one-on-one attention that we would like them to receive from a caring and competent adults. And even though we've done some hard work, we still have not restored the 120 sections of high school classes that are needed for our students. I urge you to please consider a $7.5 billion K-12 budget. Oregon can do better. We can do better. We have to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Matt Utterback, superintendent of the North Clackamas School District, the state's fifth largest school district with over 17,000 students. I'm testifying today on the current proposed $7.235 billion state school fund budget out of concern for the damage that that funding level will cause the students of my district. It is not my intent to upset you, but a 7.235 funding level for K-12 education will be disastrous for my school district, still reeling and not fully recovered from the recession. 7.235 means that North Clackamas will receive $87 less per student next year compared to our current funding level. 7.235 does nothing to restore the remaining 170 teaching positions that were cut during the recession. 7.235 means we will maintain 3 furlough days for the next 2 years, resulting in 7 consecutive years without a full school year. $7.235 billion would maintain average class sizes well above pre-recession levels. By example, that level would maintain the fourth grade classrooms at Oregon Trail Elementary School at 36 students each. And Ms. Rochester, a math teacher at Clackamas High School, will continue to see over 38 students in each of her 6 periods. $7.235 billion would limit our ability to purchase new curriculum materials that align to the Common Core. On average, our most recent curriculum is over a dozen years old. Not only are our social studies books falling apart, they were last updated in 1999 when Bill Clinton was president, and 9/11 was still in the planning stages. 7.235 would limit our ability to upgrade technology and replace 1,600 student computers that are over 7 years old. These are the realities we face at a $7.235 billion funding level. But as a Registered Guard newspaper wrote yesterday in an editorial, Oregon must face the reality that nearly all other states, rich and poor, Republican, Democratic, Northern, Southern, seem to have found ways to support their public school systems at higher levels than Oregon. I know each of you are huge supporters of education. 3 of you represent our school district. Our students and teachers need your help to not allow the 7.235 budget to be adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments, Senator Monroe, to your team?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. These gentlemen represent 2 of the best-run school districts in the state, and I'm very proud to be able to serve large portions of both North Clackamas and David Douglas. And of course, I spent 10 years on the David Douglas School Board. So thank you all for coming. Appreciate it. We're going to do the best job we can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And just to remind you, it's Forest Grove School District. Oh, you're all ready?
Representative Compton, yes. Actually 3 of us signed up from Forest Grove.
Okay, so Rob, you're going to wait till the next time. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. And so on deck would be Rob Hess and North Santiam with Dave Boland and Kathy Conley. Please, go ahead.
Sorry, Co-Chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the Education Subcommittee, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today. I'm John Hayes, Chair of the Forest Grove School District. And it is my pleasure to be before you. I won't repeat what others have said about the lack of funding for K through 12 education. They were very eloquent in what they said. Forest Grove includes most of Cornelius as well. We're a high poverty district. There is no chance of our passing a levy to help offset lack of school funding. We are reeling from past cuts. and we've noticed that the fraction of the state funding that goes to schools has decreased by 12.7% since 2003-05, and the proposed $7.235 billion budget represents a further erosion of that. It will cause the Forest Grove School District to be about $2.4 million short, which is the equivalent of about 24 teaching positions. And we are once again sliding downhill. And so Oregon has more or less climbed out of the Great Recession, and yet the schools are still in recession mode. This is just not working for us. I'm going to circulate to you a resolution that was passed by the Forest Grove School District Board of Directors at its meeting on March 9th, imploring you to raise the funding to $7.875
billion. Good morning, Yvonne.
Good morning. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee, for listening this morning to all of us. I come before you with my story today as the superintendent of Forest Grove School District, but also as a mother of two boys in the school district. Every night I go to sleep wondering if I am doing the right thing for my children, even staying in Oregon, as I watch the disinvestment. And yet it's a beautiful, wonderful place with great, wonderful people. And so that's the dilemma. I try to go to sleep every night thinking about that. I entered the district after the previous superintendent had cut everything possible except the staff. It was a $5 million reduction. By the spring of my first year as superintendent, I was forced to cut one quarter of the teaching staff, one third of the support staff, and close an elementary school 1 week after school was out. That was another $7.5 million cut. Over the next 4 years, we cut the budget three more times. During this time, our students lost 25 days of instruction. We are still down 62 teachers and 5 administrators. During this time of one budget cut after another, many of our support staff literally took on 2 additional jobs and have had no relief. Class sizes in our 5th and 6th grades are 35 to 38. Our core classes in middle school and high school are 42 to 45. We have core classes where we can't fit any more chairs in the room, and the students are sitting on windowsills and tables to write English papers. The cut in teaching staff required a change in our schedule, and now every student, grades 7 through 12, get one less elective opportunity every year for their last 6 years. So if this is year-long courses, that's 6 lost opportunities. If they're semester classes, it's 12 lost opportunities. My own children in middle school now have to choose between, they only can take one elective. They can choose a STEM class, orchestra, or Spanish. If they want to stay learning music, they never get another elective.
And if you could bring conclusion.
Okay. So I'll just skip to the end. If you make the decision to pass the budget for K-12 at the co-chair's recommendation, as you heard, we will have to reduce the budget by 2.4 million, 24 teachers. That's 61 less per student. And I want you to continue to think about the kids who are entering our school. The kids who are just coming to kindergarten are the kids born in the Great Recession. So the ones who come to you for special services through other means, it's just going to get worse. Let's teach them to fish so that they can help future generations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name's Mireya Rosas Barajas. Sorry.
I knew how to say Barajas, but I just couldn't.
Every substitute of my life, it's okay. They always butcher it. Good morning. How has the loss of funding in education affected the students of Oregon? With ever-dwindling funds, we are ever losing kids from the arts because these kids are expected to have a significant amount of background before they enter the high school art programs. But where are they expected to earn this training? Growing up in a district surrounded by poverty, I can tell you that expecting kids to go find other means of learning how to paint, act, read music, etc., is an unrealistic goal in a town where some families can't even expect to have a meal for tonight. If we are not providing these resources to kids, they don't have any means to educate themselves in the arts, creating a generation that will not appreciate the hard work that goes into painting a masterpiece and will never be cultured enough to appreciate live theater. And what about the loss of our outdoor school program? I hated science growing up, and still do, but outdoor school was something magical for me because it was the first time I was truly away from my parents, which taught me how to be independent, and the first time I had really been submerged in nature because I had lived in the city all my life. And to this day, I can still remember all the lessons I learned, which is why it pains me to tell you that my class was the last class to attend outdoor school in Forest Grove, because next year will be the first year that no student at Forest Grove High School will have any knowledge of the outdoor school program. And every year we prolong funding this program is another year loss. Leaving the extracurriculars behind, we move on to what's going on daily in the classroom, how Abby Aguirre worries about the effects of her calculus class having 30-plus students in it, how that will affect her as a student and her peers. Because for some kids, that one-on-one time with teachers is crucial and vital to the learning process. So what do we do now? Just pick and choose which kids deserve to be in that class? We can't. We don't.
And Mira, if you finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just
we need to
breath.
Step up and fund these kids' futures, because right now we're letting them down. And although I am a senior, I have two younger siblings, and they deserve better.
Thank you. Thank you for coming today. Okay, North Santa Ana, Dave and Kathy Conley and Rob Hess is coming. Well, we're going to split people up. This is like school. We're making choices, but that we don't want to.
Have two of you come up, and then the next two
will go in the next panel. Yeah. However you want to do it, I apologize.
We'll join now.
Rob?
Monroe and Representative Comp. But my name is, members of the committee, my name is Rob Hess. I'm the superintendent in the Lebanon Community School District. And I'm not really going to share anything you don't already know. I just want to remind you of a few things that are really, really important to us. Oregon funds at the bottom of the country in terms of funding for education. You've heard that, you've seen the data. Our kids perform in the middle, and that's because we've got great people here. Imagine what would happen if we could just fund in the middle. Our kids would be at the top, and that's the kind of state that we want. And I've got data here that shows that we have defunded public education over the last 25 years worse than any other state, bar none. And you can go to this website, you can look up any district in the country, you can look up any state and do comparisons. And that's what we've done. And it's together we can fix this, but it's gonna take about 10 years to fix it. Five bienniums. Let's start with this one. I know you know that we can do better than the number that's out there right now. We can do better, and I implore you to find a way, make a way to do better, because our kids deserve it, our state deserves it. Every dollar that goes into education comes out $1.25 into the economy, and that's because we hire people. When we get money, we go out and hire people. We put people to work, and they go to work, and they make a difference for kids. And every other social service, public safety, everything improves when we invest in public education. So I implore you, let's do better. Let's fix this in 10 years. Let's start with this biennium. Thank you for listening, and thank you for caring.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you. Committee, thank you for having us today. I'm Dave Bullen. I'm the Associate Superintendent of the North Santa Ana District, and I'm here to speak about the strategic initiatives in the budget and in favor of those. This has been my 15th year in education. It's one been the best years that we've had for improving educator effectiveness in our district. I'll tell you a little bit about our district. We're about 2,500 students. We have about 140 teachers, and what's unique about our district is our goal-setting process. Our goal-setting process is very elaborate, it's very comprehensive, and it really drives everything that we do. It begins in February with our board setting district goals and board goals, and it continues throughout the spring where our directors and principals align to those goals of the board. In June, we gather into an administrative workshop where we look at all of our data sources within our district. That of educator effectiveness, that of student achievement, and we also look at needs assessments. Out of that session, our district principals reach four goals. And in those four goals, They improve their schools and embedded in those four goals. In the past, what I've done is I've taken Title I, Title II, and Title III and aligned it to implement those goals. Now, with strategic initiatives, it's been an absolute game changer for our district. We're now able to take those funds and align them to that goals process as well. And we've seen outstanding improvement in our district because of the addition of those funds. What we've done is we've gone out and searched for those strategic initiatives that matches the goals and philosophy of our district, and we've aligned those with those goal-setting process and that of the Blues to the board. The game changer for us was a collaboration grant, and that has four pillars in it: meaningful evaluations, Pro-D, professional development, career pathways, and compensation. That was the work that we were already doing in the district. It's become the hub of our district. We've tied that with the Educator Effectiveness Common Core State Standard Grant, basically aligned all those together to improve our district.
And if you can bring it to a conclusion.
The best thing about those grants is the quality of the professional development that we received, both from COSA, Chalkboard, ODE, and being able to bring outside people in our district has been a fantastic improvement into our state and has benefited our district tremendously. And these folks have been participating in that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Nicole Britton.
And Nicole, I'm going to have you turn towards the microphone.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you for letting me come here today. I'm a fifth grade teacher of 32 fantastic students, and I'm here on their behalf today. That's about the only thing that would drag me out of the classroom. But as I was thinking about what to say as I came today, and I was thinking about our capital, and coming here, I was thinking of the countless field trips that I've brought my students to. Some of your faces are familiar. I know Sherry's even visited our building before. And one of the things that I love to talk to my students about is the pioneering spirit of our state. Our state is the state of trailblazers. Our state is the state of the pioneers, the innovators. And that is what I want our state to have for our public education. And with the way things are funded right now, sadly, it's difficult for school districts to do. My passion right now is a collaboration grant. Because of the collaboration grant, even though our district was reeling from the recession and the cut funding, the state was able to partner with us and infuse our district with some money that allowed us to target things such as career pathways for teachers, new leadership roles, job-embedded professional development, which for me personally gave me opportunity as a teacher that has been teaching for a number of years to go into classrooms with other teachers and to help them bring technology into their instruction. These are the type of things that I want to see happen in our schools all over. I do not want us to just get by. That is not what our kids deserve. I want to see the state of Oregon blaze trails when it comes to education. I want to see us to be first and foremost. And I ask that you please consider very carefully fully funding education and also bringing those grants in so that you can partner with the districts and help them to blaze new trails so we can become the progressive leaders of education that I think our state should be. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, distinguished committee members. My name is Kathy Conley, and I'm teaching at State and High School. And I'm going to talk about the practical aspects of funding this bill. I've been involved in the collaboration grant in our district, and it provided some leadership opportunities that have been sustained. For the first time in a 25-year career, I've been able to get professional development that lasted throughout the year. The impact of the dollar amount is exponential because I've been able to help teachers with the experience I already have and the skills and new knowledge that I learned this year. I've been able to help teachers who have less experience in my district. They have new knowledge and new skills, and they've been able to help students in our district. And I can see that spreading like a trickle-down pyramid in a perfect way. The other program I'd like to talk about is Willamette Promise, which our district has been participating in. I am teaching a communications course, and I had first semester 7 students. It's not a lot, because we all know the fear of public speaking is the greatest fear. You'd rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. So my students took this class, and 6 of the 7 are likely to get college credit. What that does is give them the opportunity to have a dream. Those who are not likely to go to college now can have a dream of going to college. That means in the future we have more tax revenue. That's practical. It makes more students want to come to, I mean, their parents want to come to Oregon and enroll their students in our schools. We know that the students who then were already planning to go to college will save some money, enter the workforce sooner, and become productive citizens in our economy. So I ask you to increase the funding for these programs and continue to keep them in our budget, not only to help our students, but to help those teachers help other people so that our dollars go even further. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
Good morning. My name is Alan Kirby, and I'm the principal of Staten High School in the North Staten School District, also a longtime government teacher, so I'm excited to be here. In a smaller district as ours, students don't always recognize the opportunities that are out there in the world. The Willamette Promise Grant that Kathy just spoke of has really given me an opportunity to help spread those opportunities to kids. It gives teachers extra energy because they get to work with college faculty in creating these opportunities and these pathways towards college credit. It gives the students a chance to shine and the opportunity to see what college level work is about and that they can do it, that they can accomplish at the college level. It's also helping me to build pathways, career pathways for students towards their future, and has been a game changer for kids who didn't think that college was an opportunity for them. In fact, as I ran some numbers last night, I have learned and have understood for sure that next year I'll be able to offer in our high school the equivalent of a full freshman year of college to our students. And that's because of the Willamette Promise Grant and the opportunity that we have to work with these other universities and colleges to give those kids the opportunity that they will be a leg up as they get to college. They will know the level of work they need to do. They will have saved money and be ready to go move forward as sophomores if we continue this forward. So I'd like to just continue to see that happen for my students. It's a big opportunity. It has really changed the culture of our school, and it's a great thing. So I hope that will continue for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I can't let you leave, but I have to tell you that I did my student teaching at Staten High in 1989, and Bob and John taught me everything I know.
Go Eagles. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Gonna do the two sets of people because I didn't say who's on deck. So it's Bettina Shrimp and from Old Mill. Oh, from a relief nursery. Okay, great.
Cindy Bond.
And then Eric Johnston and Albert Garcia. And then on deck, we're going to have Iris Maria Chavez and Sue Miller and Dick Whitnell.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. I'm changing the bill. So we're testifying on behalf of 5016. My name is Bettina Schempf. I'm the executive director of the Old Mill Center for Children and Families, and I'm here to represent the Early Learning Hub in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties that serves those three counties as well as the Confederate tribes of the Siletz Indians. Old Mill Center provides integrated preschool, relief nursery, healthy families, as well as counseling to families and children. So works a lot with at-risk families. So we are really happy to be part of the hub. The Early Learning Hub in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties has brought together more than 200 organizations to work with children, 13,000 children I'm representing here that are considered at risk because of poverty, because of mental illness of their parents, because of aspects that they that make them at risk of not actually getting to education that we just heard from. An investment in early education will bring kids 0 to 6 ready for kindergarten and will be leveraged through the education budget so the teachers can focus on what we've just heard, really feeding minds and getting the kids ready for studies, ready for the employment. We are already seeing the impact of our work. We heard last week how exciting it is to work across boundaries, health, education, business. We're bringing all the partners together, and we're having success in connecting families that are previously not connected, and we're really excited that a continued investment will leverage itself. You're just not just giving us money, we are leveraging it twice, three times, four times in the community because we work together, we really find the parents we want to find that we haven't served before, and we're taking away the barriers, and then we deliver the kids to kindergarten ready to learn and ready to thrive.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, microphone.
Co-chair Comp and Monroe and other distinguished committee members. I'm Cindy Bond, and I'm the Relief Nursery Director and Prevention Manager at Old Mill Center for Children and Families in Benton County. Relief nurseries have been preparing children for school for over 37 years. As you're well aware, school readiness is a statewide goal for all of our early learning hubs. While there are many high-quality early childhood programs, relief nurseries have continued to focus on laying the foundational skills, such as social-emotional development, problem-solving skills, self-regulation, in addition to the pre-academics. While many children enter school ready to learn, there are those who do not have that foundational base that allows them to learn. They cannot wait, take turns, share, manage emotions, maintain positive peer relationships, organize their schoolwork, or follow classroom routine. Brain development doesn't start when children enter school. It doesn't start when they enter preschool. It starts at birth. And however, what we know about children experiencing trauma such as abuse, neglect, domestic violence, et cetera, is that they have brains that don't develop typically, and without the intervention and prevention services that programs such as Relief Nursery provide, they enter school with and are mislabeled as having attention deficit disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, and other behavioral challenges. Relief nurseries have a proven track record of providing the necessary supports for not only the child but the entire family through therapeutic early childhood classrooms and home visiting services. And we're working closely with our early childhood hubs to identify children and reaching those children who need services. Relief nurseries have waiting lists for both their therapeutic classroom and home-based services. For example, in Benton County, Monroe is an underserved community with a high Latino population. There's no Head Start. The preschool is 6 miles away, and without transportation, families cannot get there. There's only one in-home provider, and Old Mill Center is working with the community to provide home-based and outreach services and hopefully a satellite. So we ask that you continue to fund relief nurseries and add the additional $1.4 million for satellite services. And thank you for your continued support.
Thank you so much and for your work for our young ones.
Thank you.
Yes. And is Eric Johnston and Albert Garcia?
We're sorry for not showing up with them.
Well, you don't get paid today. You're just fine. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Eric Johnson. I'm the founder and executive director of a small nonprofit in Clackamas County. We serve the rural communities in Clackamas County. And in the past, we've talked a little bit about PreventNet, and I wanted to say, you know, thank you, YDC, for, you know, funding PreventNet in Clackamas County. I want to give you a little definition of PreventNet, and then I'm going to turn it over to Albert Garcia, who's actually in the trenches. PreventNet is a system of collaborations located in 7 communities and 10 schools in Clackamas County. We've been in operation for 15 years and are very grateful to YDC for funding, for the funding that has helped us maintain our efforts in Clackamas County.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Albert Garcia. I work for Todos Juntos, and I serve as a prevention specialist and also a family resource coordinator from Owalla River Middle School. I'm here to support Bill 5016 and also to illustrate the importance of the Youth Development Council. I've been doing after-school groups and activities and also prevention interventions and gender-specific curriculum-based groups for over 4 years, and the impact that we've had on kids is beyond measure, specifically the at-risk youth, which we work with. The middle school years can be very overwhelming, and I believe that our programs really help them to kind of acclimate themselves in the school systems. The activities and structure we provide give these kids positive and productive outlets and also help them to help to answer many of the questions and challenges about life that occupy their minds. But most importantly, I really believe that the Youth Development Council and its programs are so beneficial to the success of these kids because of the life skills and the positive character traits that we try to teach them, which is really not always provided by the normal school system and their requirements. Most kids at this time in their lives have too much time on their hands, and they often succumb to the pressures, the negative pressures of their peers and the environment that they live in. So the programs that we provide definitely give them a productive way to spend that time and a means to stay on the right path while providing a strong foundation to become productive members of society. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time this morning, and I hope the sunshine was good in Molalla.
Thank you.
It's a pretty community. Iris Marie Chavez and Sue Miller and Dick Withnell, and on deck. Okay, we'll do Katrina Navarette and Gladstone and Lisa Harnish and Lisa McCauley. That's who's on deck. Thank you. Dick.
Madam Chair.
Get us wrapped up and wound to go.
Okay, right. Only in America would you have an individual speak about education, a C-minus student as a used car salesman, too. Really, Dick Alexander got me. I carry this around with me, and we're talking about early ed right now. And I always carry it around with me just to remind me, Dick Alexander, the corporate leader, weighs a successful decade-long effort to expand early childhood programs that admirers will say will change tens of thousands of lives and bolster Oregon economy. And I also carry with a Band-Aid with that. And that Dick was on the Public Safety Committee back in 2004, 2005, and when he realized that the kids that were having troubles, the juvenile delinquency particularly, that there was a better way to solve this problem, and that was early education. And he was one of the leaders that formed the Children's Institute, of which I became involved with also. And Sue Miller will be speaking about it too, but Sue has also explained to me as a business person too the early childhood development of the brain development at a very early age. 80% of the brain is developed within 36 months. I think when we talk about money, and I encourage you to look at the $30 million on preschool, but when you look at that dollars, don't look at that as an expense, but look at it as what kind of results will that dollar get. It's no difference than spending advertising money. You know, advertising money is not an expense. It's a return on investment on what it will do for you as a business person. And I think we need to look at the value. What will this money give us? And the value will be very, very significant. I like to draw T accounts, and there's no better T account than early education. The transformation of a life and the return on investment, it's really a win-win. And I really encourage us to look at that, please.
Thank you, Dick.
Good morning. Co-chairs and committee members, my name is Sue Miller. I'm the chair of the Early Learning Hub in Marion County. I'm also on the Children's Institute's Statewide Leadership Council. And I'm here today asking for funding for three pieces of the Early Learning. Whoops, it just went up red.
Oh, that's
because time flies, right?
Thank you.
That's it, okay. I'll take his 10 seconds.
Yes.
For three parts of the early learning budget. First of all, preschool. You all know the importance of investing early so that when children arrive at kindergarten, they're ready to be successful and to fly. $30 million will only translate into serving about 3,000 children over a biennium if they're non-duplicated kids, but it's a beginning for the 32,000 children who are 3 and 4 year olds and living in poverty. So I urge you to at least start that. Secondly, I urge you to continue funding and hopefully increase the funding for the Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Funds, KPI. Those are the funds that many organizations and hubs around the state have used for the professional development, trying to connect the kindergarten folks with the preschool and childcare providers so that it's a seamless transition from preschool and childcare into the K-12 system. Also, parent engagement has been a huge piece of what we all have used for the KPI funds for, and we all know parent engagement for young children is a key to success. And thirdly, I would urge you to fund hubs, early learning hubs. And please remember, as you're looking at the numbers, both for KPI and for the early learning hubs, the number last for the last biennium really was a one-year number because the oldest hub, and we're the oldest hub, just celebrated our one-year anniversary. So please remember, just holding us status would be doubling the amount, but we really could use increased funding. For our local hub, I think the most transformational piece has been the cross-sector with the kindergarten teachers and preschool teachers, and also the cross-sector with the healthcare system. We have our CCO executive on our hub board, and all sorts of exciting connections are happening now that healthcare is talking to the early learning folks. So, thank you.
Thank you. And Sue, I have to ask you, when did you start the first relief nursery?
I co-founded the relief nursery in Salem in 1997.
She has become one of my most expensive friends.
Yeah, I'm sure she is one of your most expensive friends. Have you calculated how many students, how many children that's impacted in those years?
It would be several thousand. Because Family Building Blocks is the name of our relief nursery, and it serves approximately 800 to 1,000 children a year now.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the ability to launch that and serve those very high-risk kids has been the partnership that we privately have had with the state. So you all have been a huge part of that foundation, so thank you for that.
Thank you. Iris.
Good morning, everyone. Co-chairs Monroe and Comp, my name is Iris Maria Chavez. I'm the Government Affairs Director with Stanford Children. I want to thank you for allowing all of us to be here to talk to you about the K-12 education budget. We're really looking forward to working with you as you move forward on this. We would like to say that we think that Oregon has made some incredible strides over the last several years under the leadership of Deputy Superintendent Rob Saxton. We've done a good look at school discipline practices, increasing educator supports through things like the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning, and really focusing on things like early learning with the full day K implementation that's rolling out. However, we still remain challenged as a state. Our achievement gaps are big, and they're not closing fast enough to be fair to our students and prepare them for the life that they'll lead after high school. We do know that you face a challenging financial situation right now. We applaud you all for taking the K-12 state school fund number above the governor's recommended budget. And we look forward to working with you to see what can be done in that space. However, we do want to talk a little bit about the strategic investments. We think that there needs to be a good balance between the state school fund number and the strategic investments, because those are the dollars that really help us address achievement and opportunity gaps. They allow us to target our dollars on programs that we've been working on that we know are successful at doing this, and programs that we know through research and practice in other places could be tremendously successful. I'd like to call a couple of those out for you. One, I won't go into much detail because my colleagues before me have, but investing in high-quality early learning, tremendously important. Investing in the educator support pipeline from teacher prep all the way to leadership development through the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning. We'd really encourage you to fully fund that at $55 million. We also want to look at ways to better support targeted investments for English language learner students and addressing chronic absenteeism. These are two issues that our membership has been working on for several years, and we really look forward to finding a way to continue funding those. So thank you all for all of your work.
Thank you so much. Okay, Lisa McConich, Katrina Navarette, and Lisa Harnish. And on deck, we have Irene Taylor Bratsky, Ella Bratsky, and Ellie Kobach. And we're doing well, folks. I know 2 minutes isn't a lot of time, but your message is coming across very well, so thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairs Comp, Monroe, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lisa McConaughey. I'm the director of Columbia Regional Program, the largest of the 8 low-incidence regional programs in the state of Oregon. Regional programs work in collaboration with school districts, education service districts, early intervention, and early childhood services to educate students who are blind, visually impaired, deaf, hard of hearing, deaf blind, or experience autism spectrum disorder, traumatic brain injury, or severe orthopedic impairments. These disabilities are rare and require unique expertise and accommodations that regional programs provide. We work in alignment, with goals of college and career readiness, pre-to-three literacy, and education excellence. We are partners in supporting standards-based education, literacy, graduation, and transition to career in college. What is the impact of regional programs? Children can attend their local neighborhood schools regardless of their disabilities in anywhere in our state. We recruit, retain, and hire highly specialized staff to meet the needs of these students. Regional programs purchase high-cost specialized equipment for these students to provide accommodations and effective communication. We build capacity in our school districts. As with all education funding, our funding has been reduced over the last 7 years. It's important to understand the lost services in audiology for students for communication, for services for students with significant disabilities, augmentative communication, evaluation in autism, and complex disabilities. These services are not replaced in school districts or the community because of the rarity of these disabilities. It's also important to understand that of the $58 million for regional programs, 50% is provided directly from school districts. The legislative funding has been reduced from a high of $31 million to a current of $26 million. That, again, is a cost shift and an additional burden to our school districts. At a minimum, I would like to request an increase in regional funding for between $3 and $3.5 million to restore these lost services. I would also like to invite you to visit regional programs in your community to understand these unique services in Oregon. In your listening session, I hope you meet students, families, and educators who directly benefit from these services. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for serving those children.
Thank you.
Young people.
Very good. Okay. Co-chair Representative Comp and co-chair Senator Monroe and members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Lisa Harnish, and I'm the executive director of the Early Learning Hub, Inc. here in Marion County. And I'm here today in strong support for the continued and increased investment in early learning hubs, and a coordinated system and approach to early learning services. The early learning hubs across the state are very new, and they hold a lot of promise by bringing together a variety of systems to better coordinate and align how services are delivered to families and to children, and helping to stress the importance of the first 5 years of life. As an early learning hub, we're cultivating cross-sector collaboration to better align and leverage resources to better meet the needs of kids and families in our community. The need here in Marion County is great. Our children are entering kindergarten with lower than the statewide average on the kindergarten assessment. We have a high rate of poverty and a high population where English is not the first language. Our work here is primarily in defined neighborhoods. Currently, we are in 16 out of 62 elementary schools here in Marion County. We have been working very hard over the last year, and through the investment in early learning, we've been able to hold vertically aligned professional development, bringing together child care, bringing together Head Start and kindergarten teachers to better align the curriculum to help ensure that kids are ready for kindergarten. We have family engagement nights and other things to help bring families in to help support them in being their child's first teacher and making sure that they're ready for kindergarten. We also have a fabulous partnership with our coordinated care organization where we are working with them to help impress the importance of kindergarten. We're actually signing a letter this week to go out to all families on OHP, letting them know about how to get kids registered for kindergarten. We're also working with the medical community through Reach Out and Read, where doctors through Well Child visits are offering books and stressing the importance of reading. We've done a lot of work, and there's a lot to do, and we're excited to be serving on behalf of children and families here in Marion County. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Katrina Navarrete. I'm a family resource coordinator at the Gladstone Center for Children and Families, and I am just here to show my appreciation for your support and attention to the early learning initiatives in the state of Oregon.
I partner with the Clackamas Early Learning Hub with the goal of empowering families to support their young children to reach early educational milestones by providing them with increased family stability. Local pediatricians, teachers, school staff, and other support agencies refer families to me who they feel would benefit from extra support to become stable. In my role, I help families identify areas where they have strengths and look to connect them to community resources to improve areas of challenge. This process of linking and stabilizing families eases stresses on these multi-stressed families so that they can adequately support their child's development. I've seen this intervention to be vital and transformative in the lives of vulnerable families, leading to increased educational success for their children. I'd like to share one short case of a family who I personally worked with. The family was referred to me by a classroom teacher who just shared that mom was experiencing multiple stressors and traumas. I met the family, and over the next couple of months, through regular visits and coaching mom and doing lots of behind-the-scenes connecting, I helped her to engage with counseling services to process her trauma from intimate partner violence, connected the children to counseling services at our Gladstone Center, assisted the family in accessing financial supports, and helped enroll the youngest child in a supportive preschool environment. The presence of a family resource coordinator in this family's life has made all the difference for them. And as a result, the family is more stable financially and emotionally, and mom is more able to be a support to her children in a way that is facilitating and will continue to facilitate their academic and developmental successes. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today, and thank you so much for continuing to strongly support early education.
Thank you, and thank all of you for your work. It does make a difference one at a time.
Yeah, one at a time.
Okay, Irene Taylor Bratsky and Ella Bratsky and Ella Kobach. On deck is Tanya Hunt, Sophia, you'll help. You and Evan can help me with your last name.
I'm not talking. I'm Ellie Kobach's mother. There's no Ellie Pensky. There's just Ellie Kobach.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Ellie Kobach. When I was 2 years old, my parents noticed my speech was delayed, and so I went through many tests only to discover that I'm hearing impaired. During the same time, I started working with Sherry Brown, an audiologist at Columbia Regional, and continued working with her for the next 12 years until last spring when funding for Columbia Regional Audiology was terminated. Not only was Sherry instrumental in keeping tabs on my hearing, adjusting my hearing aids, and making sure my ear molds were fitting correctly, I believe she demonstrated the benefit of an integrated relationship between the audiologist and the hearing speech specialist in the schools. There was an amazing relationship between my hearing test results and what I needed in the classroom to do well. Since kindergarten, I have been in a Spanish immersion program and have been a straight A student. I don't believe it would have been as smooth as a ride without the audiology services from Columbia Regional. Another huge benefit of Columbia Regional is the cost saving for my parents. With all the trips to see Sherry, my parents never had to worry about the cost for another trip to the audiologist, and there were many. This was very apparent this past fall. My mom lost her job, so money has been tight. I needed new ear molds and needed to get my hearing tested. My parents struggled to find a pediatric audiologist covered by insurance, but ended up taking me to OHSU. As it turns out, ear molds are not covered by insurance. OHSU's cost was $200. My mom refused to buy them there and tried shopping around to see if she could get a better price. The best she could find was a private practice that charged $160, a lot of money for my parents considering my mom was still unemployed. About the same time before we started the process of getting new ear molds with the private practice, we learned that Portland Public Schools was funding audiology services with Columbia Regional. We ended up going there and got ear molds for $90, over 100% cheaper than what OHSU would have charged. I believe high-quality audiology services that are integrated with speech and hearing specialists and that are affordable enable hearing-impaired kids to be successful in school. Many people do not realize how challenging it is to be hearing impaired in school. I truly believe that Columbia Regional has led me to success and gave me confidence despite my disability. Please don't cut back on funding. The services offered by Columbia Regional are critical.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you're doing well.
I'm so glad Ellie could speak specifically to what I'd also like to speak about. My name is Irene Taylor Brodsky. Thank you for hearing me today. I am a journalist and filmmaker. I'm also the mother of a deaf child currently in the Portland Public School District. I also happen to be the daughter of two deaf parents who were educated in the public system in the 1940s and 50s. So I've witnessed in a very personal way how public education has supported and not supported kids with disabilities. I'm here to voice my support for our regional programs throughout the state. They support children with low incidence disabilities all through Oregon. My son has a disability. He's deaf and he wears two cochlear implants, one in each ear. IDEA regulations require that children with hearing loss have equal access to education and to assure appropriate hearing technology. For children with hearing loss, learning is directly tied to what they hear. They need to hear their teachers, of course, but they also need to hear their peers. Cochlear implants have revolutionized the way children can listen. It's often said that if you implant a deaf child early in their life, the brain will do the rest. That's true, almost, but it's not the full picture. We need our regional programs to serve as that critical bridge between revolutionary technologies and true effective learning. Audiologists in our regional programs ensure that children's listening devices are in working order. They train teachers and they ensure that classroom FM listening systems are set up and working. They test children in simulated listening booths to ensure that they have true access in our noisy classrooms. Audiologists are the critical link for kids with hearing loss in the school system. Without them, we are wasting resources that technology now offers to us. Last year, our audiology services were cut in the Portland district. Students and parents like Ellie and I were left in a tailspin. Kids' hearing aids broke, implants were not working, ear molds were needed, teachers could not operate their own classroom systems without the effective training.
And Lisa, can you finish up?
I urge you to increase funding for the regional programs throughout our state. Thank you very much.
And thank you for all your work, because not all of us think about cochlear implants and all those things that make it possible for people to hear and share relationships and all those vital things that we all think everybody has. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Tanya and Sophia and Evan.
And on deck are
thank you,
Tricia Smith and Joel Fisher, and that's all that I have signed up. If we miss someone, please meet me over here right now.
Who wants to go first?
Hi,
Tanya.
Good morning, co-chairs Comp and Monroe and members of the committee. My name is Tanya Hunt. I serve as executive director of Children First for Oregon, statewide children's advocacy organization. We represent about 860,000 children in the state of Oregon. About 570 of those are in our K-12 system. So we know that the education system has the largest impact on child well-being in this state and is a really important foundation for the work that we do together as a state for our children. Children First is a data-driven organization, which means we're constantly looking at what's working and what's not. Tomorrow, we're releasing a statewide report showing that a lot of things actually aren't making progress for kids. And I would say a big part of that is our K-12 funding. Unfortunately, we're seeing continued high levels of child poverty, continued levels of high dropout, continued levels of high foster care. Those all relate to the foundation we're laying for our kids in our K-12 system. So as we look at our education system, we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can as a state to ensure our future economy, the future well-being of our kids. At Children First, we know that that means a strongly funded, adequately funded, holistic education system for our children.
I would say that the education system is the foundation of equity for our state. It's the foundation of opportunity for children in our state. And really, it is the foundation of the democracy in our country. Without the K-12 funding system, or funded system, we will not be able to relate to each other through a democratic system. We believe at Children First that we need at least $7.5 billion in the K-12 system. In nearly 25 years of advocacy at Children First, we have rarely advocated around K-12 because we've seen it as something that's always been taken care of. This year, we're deeply concerned, and we see it as something that we must address together and make sure that we meet that minimum and that that minimum end up in the hands of our local school districts. Thanks.
Thank you, Tanya. Okay, we have this colleagues, we have this beautiful mother-daughter team here, so.
Hello, my name is Sophia DeCorius. I'm a freshman at Oregon City High School, and I'm very proud to say that I'm a straight-A student. I always try my hardest. I have twin younger siblings in sixth grade, Ian and Morgan. I want them to do best in their school. I believe that our schools cannot have any more budget cuts. When I asked my friends, do you think our schools should have more budget cuts? Guess what they said? Their responses ranged from no way to that wouldn't help anything. Then I asked my siblings. They told me, no, well, unless we get less days of school, that would be nice. But that's to be expected. What student doesn't want less days of school? Well, I don't. On average, Oregon students, me included, receive one instructional year less, K through 12, than the national average. I don't like that. My peers and I want to get into good colleges, but we have competition for that because there are people who want to get into those same colleges, but know more than us because they have had more days of school than us. That's assuming we even graduate college. Oregon has one of the lowest graduation rates in the country. This new budget that is being proposed will not help. Oregon City Schools will receive $104 less next year per student. $7.235 billion is more than $300 million short of what my school district needs to maintain our current programs, add full-day kindergarten, operate a full school year, and replace outdated curriculum and technology. Do you realize that this year is the first school year since the 2008 to 2009 school year that the Oregon City School District has had a full year? This means that this is the first full school year that my siblings have had. And now that we have it, these budget cuts will take it away. I do not want that. So what would be better? How about a $7.5 billion budget? With that, most school districts will be able to maintain current programs and class sizes while adding full-day kindergarten. True, it's a good step in the right direction, but why don't we take it a leap to $7.875 billion?
And can I ask you to finish?
Yeah. That budget gives us reduced class sizes, which allows teachers to give more specific instructions. By making these changes now, you are paving the way for the success of the next generation, my generation. Thank you.
Thank you, and good luck at Oregon State.
Hi, my name is Yvonne DeCorius, and I am a parent, and I am a board member at the Oregon City School District, and I am a concerned citizen. I'm asking that you please do all that you can to increase the amount currently proposed for school funding. With family, friends, and teachers that are family members in school districts in Canby, Gladstone, Oregon City, Portland, and West Lynn, we are keenly aware of the negative impact of overcrowded classrooms and shortened school calendars. Imagine trying to teach or learn in a classroom of 37 or more middle school students with no room for even one more desk. This is a daily reality in many districts, and the impact can be even worse in school classrooms, in elementary school classrooms. I volunteer in the classrooms, and I've been doing that for 9 years. I've seen firsthand the effects of the budget cuts during the recession. I saw students fail because the teacher had so many students that she couldn't help all that were struggling. I will never forget the day that I was asked to go copy something for a teacher, and there was no white copy paper in the entire school. When Sophia started school, she had music, PE, and art. Sadly, the specialists were cut by the time my twins were in school. Sophia struggled at first in math when she was younger, but now she's at the top of her class. She had a specialist there to help. My younger daughter doesn't have that, and she's in sixth grade and is still struggling. Because of the severe budget cuts that occurred, Oregon students will graduate with almost 1 year less classroom time than most students in the Oregon, most students in the U.S. This ability to compete with other students in university admissions is seriously at risk with this kind of education. Please work to increase funding to at least $7.5 billion in the coming budget cycle. Thank you for your commitment to diligently serving our citizens of Oregon, especially our children.
Thank you. Thank you for your service on the Oregon City School Board.
Thank you.
Wow. Colleagues, we have Tricia Smith and Joel Fisher to wrap it up and bring us home. We're going to wait. We'll take too long.
Good morning, members, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. You have my written testimony, and I'm certain you'll read it along with all of the other great testimony that you've received today. And the other days, you have heard from people all over Oregon who work in our schools, who govern our schools, tell you that the proposed budget amount is insufficient for K-12 to continue the programs that we are offering today and implement full-day kindergarten, which LFO estimates as an additional $286 million. We find it just inconceivable that you would pass a state school fund budget that has cuts in it when the economy does not require it. We were there understanding and watching you suffer with us when the economy did require it, but today it does not. It requires bold action by the legislature. We understand this committee is very limited in what it can do, but we would like you to go back to your leadership and your caucuses and tell them that you will not again cut K-12 funding when it's not necessary. That instead, we'd like the education committees to recognize the decimation that's happened in our schools and stop adding new requirements. We'd like the revenue committees to recognize we don't have enough money in our schools and stop giving it away. Those things are like a different planet from what's happening in this committee. We need you to act as one body and put our schools first. Please, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tricia. Joel.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, Senior Policy Analyst at the Oregon Business Association. I should say I recently hired an intern, so I am actually now senior to somebody at OBA.
the lengths people go.
Yeah. Is the festive green light for St. Patty's Day not off? There we go. we have a committee process of our, so we're a statewide organization. We represent over 250 businesses across the state of Oregon. We have committees on various subjects that meet monthly to evaluate different issues. And then we added to that process this year what we called the Rural Oregon Tour. We toured, it included actually metropolitan areas. So we went all over Oregon talking to local business leaders, local education people, local economic development people about what it is that's needed to improve the economy in all parts of Oregon. And the number one issue that came up was workforce. One of the ways that the K-12, that the education budget can deal with that is things like career technical education. So we're supportive of a robust K-12 budget, but also think there needs to be balance with some of the strategic initiatives, primarily things like career technical education, increased money for revitalization grants, and sustaining funding for those programs. We're also supportive of the third grade reading initiative, more money for the Network for Teacher Quality and Learning, and more money for early learning, and I will look forward to following up with all of you individually and give you some time. Thank you.
Thank you, and appreciate everybody's time this morning. The testimonies are...
Madam Co-Chair, can I ask Joel a question?
Well, only if he sits down, yes.
Joel, we are likely to send $350 million back because the kicker is likely to trigger. Do you think that the legislature ought to vote to keep that money and spend it all on education?
I should probably, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I think that we could get there on that, but I would need to to actually defer that question to DJ or Ryan.
Do that.
Yeah.
I want to know.
Thanks, Joel.
Yeah.
And just a couple of details before we finish. Go ahead, Mr. Wilson.
Just a reminder, the committee, subcommittee, we have hopefully one more day of Oregon Department of Education before that starts tomorrow. We will be posting connected to today's meeting materials for House Bill 5017, the latest set of runs by school district from the Legislative Revenue Office for the co-chair's budget and the assumptions in the co-chair's budget. So that is the district by district run. We'll post that. Many of you have already seen that. And then LRO staff will be here tomorrow morning to answer any questions that you may have prior to Department of Education starting their budget. And if time tomorrow, I will walk through a rather long table that sort of shows what's in and out of the governor's budget and current service level and what's funded today.
Okay, and so people know for sure LRO is legislative revenue, and Mr. Saxton came prepared to answer questions. So we have a full agenda tomorrow, and yes, we got lots of things to go do. And members, I'm sure Senator Roblin would love to say what.
Have a really, really great St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you, and I'm going to carry over House Bill 5016 and House Bill 5017. And members, we are adjourned. And people, thank you for your time and energy to come.